Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. A pair of cowboy boots can reveal a lot about who you are. Dude, rancher, fashionista? Today we catch up with Chase DeForest, a bootmaker and artist from Livingston, Montana. Her boots are not only for everyday work and evening boot scooting, but customized for fit and artistic flair. Get yourself a custom-made pair, and now you're walking on a work of art.
Chase DeForest, welcome to Resounds. Thank you for inviting us into this big, beautiful studio in Livingston, Montana. And certainly the place smells like leather, full of leather and tools and artwork. We're happy to have you here, or we're happy to be here.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the program.
Let's get started. Tell us about how on earth did you get involved with boot making?
Well, I was raised on a farm riding. You know, it started with 4-H and ponies and grew to Arabians and showing with my family. So I was riding and wearing them. And it wasn't until later in life, after a creative pursuit of furniture making, which I did for quite a number of years, that I met a custom cowboy bootmaker at a party. And I thought, you know, wow, that's a thing. I should know about that. I'm working in a craft medium. I was working at a museum at the time, and so fully enmeshed in the art world. And so it started this journey of learning about the charmingly cultish underground world of bootmakers.
I'm interested in the fact that furniture making is big stuff, big products. Boots are a smaller, more intimate experience. Did you feel that change, or did you go towards that?
Yeah, when I met that bootmaker at that party, I was about to also move from one city to another, and I was using that move to make a change. And I had sort of thought, you know, furniture making is cumbersome. You know, shop space is big and expensive. Tools are dangerous. It's hard to ship. It's hard to exhibit. You're competing with IKEA. You know, it really felt like it was time for a change. And boots really were a perfect fit because I think they're quite similar. They're both structural. They're both functional. There's a lot of the same tool language involved. So that was great, but no creative compromise because, of course, within the same structure of a boot, as opposed to having to make, a chair or a table or, all the different forms of furniture you could make just to make the same structure and put all your creativity into the various aspects of the boot where you can was infinitely easier and just as rewarding, if not more so.
I have a master's degree in sculpture, but I only did conceptual things, so it was a different process. I'm wondering, what were your first boots like? Did you learn the craft? When you take on a new topic like boot making, what was that like?
Yeah, so after I met that individual at that party, I went looking for somebody who could teach me how to make my first pair. And there aren't that many places you can do that in the country. I mean, back in the 80s, I think in Texas, like the community colleges had boot making programs, but they're long gone and there's nowhere you can do that academically. These days, the only way you can do it is to find another bootmaker, which is part of the charm, I think, of the medium, is that it's still very much a mouth-to-hand trade. And so I found a gentleman by the name of Carl Chappell in a small, tiny town in Texas, and he did these two-week courses where you could come and learn to make a pair. And, you know, so I went and I did that, and it was great because he would stand over you with everything that you did and say, no, this way. Or he'd grab the boot out of your hand and be like this and show you it. I mean, he was hilarious and it was wonderful. And then after that, I went and found somebody to apprentice with. and not only watched them make boots, but also started making my own pairs.
I keep thinking of Texas, that really is boot making country. Are boots still made by hand? I mean, Lou Casey boots. I mean, are there the famous bootmakers still actually making handmade boots, or is your craft much more individualized?
Well, I mean, custom boot making is alive and well, and ever more female, which is new, or newer than, you know, what it was traditionally in the 18th, 19th, and early 20th century. So they are made by hand, not necessarily in this country for the big bootmakers, but there are custom cowboy bootmakers all over Texas and otherwise.
Now, I've worn a fair many cowboy boots, but a lot of them I bought at secondhand stores. I have 40 pair of boots and I love them, and they all fit differently, but I only have a pair that were custom made. Let's go through the process. And actually, Chase, we're going to do this. I'm going to have you make me a pair of boots at some time soon. Being in this beautiful store makes me want to pick out the leather and go from there. But let's start from the beginning. Where do you start when somebody comes in and wants to have a custom made fit? What's your first steps?
Yeah, so when people are interested in a pair of boots, we make an appointment and they come and get fitted. I take a series of measurements of their feet. And then we talk about all the different choices they get to make, everything from toe shape to height of boot to heel shape, obviously colors and designs. And we go through all the leather options and then take it from there. I make a series of drawings. We go back and forth on details and hone in on the design. And then I make a top, their first top, and so they will actually see that before I actually start in on making the rest of the boot.
Don't you find it interesting that the part of the boot you see is not the fancy part, which is always the tops, which are sort of ornate and stitched and colored? And when I wear boots, you only see the bottom one-third of the boot.
Well, it sounds like you need to start tucking your jeans into your boots. It's a look. Plenty of men do it. Real cowboys tuck their jeans in.
Jennifer and I were just laughing about that. I said, how come all the pants that I have are thin leg pants that you can't wear over the top of boots? Lee Riders is what I grew up in, and you could always put your boot inside. So really, are people wearing pants on inside of their boots?
I mean, it happens. You know, I don't see men do it so much around here, of course. I mean, maybe the answer for you then is to do more decorative feet. That encourages you to pull up your pants.
I want people to know that we're in Chase's studio. It's not really a store. So if you wanted to have a pair of boots made, you need to make an appointment. You come in, and then you're surrounded by all these different colors of leathers. And then you also have various sizes of heels that you can show people and sort of walk through that. Chase, one of the things I found really interesting is I saw your work at the Yellowstone Art Museum art auction, and Jennifer said, well, Chase is also a bootmaker. And I said, oh, really? Well, I read your bio, and you actually have a degree from RISD. I mean, you have a honest art degree. Tell us about the transition from being an artist and a bootmaker, or a bootmaker to an artist. How do those things meld?
Well, in terms of the degree from RISD, I will say that probably the making really began as a kid, you know, and I put off graduate school for a number of years. I was really hesitant to go and get a graduate degree in art for all the reasons we know that it can be useless, right? But I finally went and did it, and was a furniture maker. That's what I studied in graduate school at RISD. And then when I evolved into making cowboy boots, as I was working with the leather, I was like, oh, this stuff is cool. I mean, never mind boots. It can do quite a bit. And because it's so ubiquitous in our day-to-day lives, right? It's probably on your feet right now or in your car. You might be having it for dinner. I mean, obviously not leather, the meat, but yet it's pretty inaccessible. You know, there's not leather shops around where you can go in and buy this kind of leather. All of those things led me down the road of exploring all of its, you know, flexibility and tensile strength and all the different things that could be done with it. And I just found that really compelling.
Because this is a radio show and not a TV show, we're not really imagining what your art would be like. So could you describe the sort of modern art pieces that you make so our listeners can kind of get a visual picture of that?
Sure. So what I do is I take pieces of leather and I collage them and stitch them together. And then I take those things and stretch them over a frame, much like you might stretch leather over a drum to make it tight. So my subject matter tends to deal with Western themes. My conceptual jumping off point is cattle, because I'm using cowhide primarily. And so, you know, there's all sorts of areas around that to explore, because there's so many aspects to cattle, right? Everything from landscapes to meat consumption to horses, wildlife, I mean, the whole package.
And if I recall, one of the pieces I saw looks like there's pieces of bridle or stirrups used as a framework, and then the leather is over the top. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm a rider, and I've done a series of artwork in which I embed horse tack beneath leather. So the piece that you saw at the Yellowstone Art Museum, for instance, was a pair of saddle fenders and stirrups embedded beneath leather. And then I did some aspen leaves that have wire armature in them that are attached around the periphery of the piece. So for me, that work is very much about just sort of capturing a moment in time with these pieces, because you're capturing the gesture. And it's sort of an homage to my love of riding and all things horse.
Chase, your background is very diverse in terms of where you have lived in different cities, different places. What brought you to Livingston?
Well, I'm from the West. You know, the family ties are in Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, Washington, not Montana, but now Montana. I had a really good friend who lived here for years, and so I'd been in and out, and I came for an art residency early in 2022 and basically never left, as one does around here.
Clearly, in your artwork, you're using the skill sets that you have for making boots, working with leather. But your art also incorporates other interesting things in terms of stitching, feathers. Does that all come from a Western background?
This feathers that you're referring to, for an exhibit a number of years ago, I did a series, maybe 20 feathers. They were all threatened prairie grassland species. So I was interested in, you know, what are these, what's the wildlife we need to be paying attention to? And it was a way to explore and learn. So all of those pieces use the actual coloration of the bird in the piece, and all the feathers are stitched sometimes to scale or double scale, because there's a lot of tiny birds out there.
I'm just thinking of my own work, actually, oh. Chase, and I've been doing a series of paintings of Indian parfletches because I was so fascinated by the design that is so unique to the Plains Indians. And that design, I'm just so interested in it. I'm wondering about the whole West and how the West and the environment, I know you're very environmentally conscious, affects what you do in terms of artwork.
Well, interesting you mentioned that series of work, because I just completed a series of details of trade blankets, just because of the whole history of trade blankets in the West. And, you know, I just loved all the patterns, have always loved that textile. And of course, leather is ultimately a textile, so I take a lot of my inspiration from other materials. So, you know, those are all up on the wall here. And then, you know, another body of work I've done that I think you may be referring to is the series of pieces that are images of federally owned parcels of land here in the state of Montana. Definitely very concerned about what's going on with protecting public lands. And, you know, Montana is incredible. Like 30% of the state is public land. That's just so incredibly unusual in this country. And there's so much of it. I think we often take it for granted and maybe don't even realize like where these parcels are. So in this project, I'm trying to make an image for, I don't want to say every piece because there's a lot as established, but quite a number of them, with the idea being that we need to have images of these things and understand what's unique about them if we're going to be able to protect them. And I've started with wilderness study areas because they're the least protected parcels of land. So there's 40, 45-ish parcels of wilderness study areas. So I've started in on making images of those. You know, there's also wilderness areas, wildlife refuges, national forests. I mean, it's a complicated system of designating lands, and sometimes you'll get, you know, you'll get a wilderness study area that's in a national forest, right? So it's hard. So it's a big education process, I think, for all of us to really understand what we're fighting for.
Chase, I'm curious how you design these images of these wilderness areas. Do you take a photo? What is your process? How do you come up with your design? And could you describe what some of these kind of almost, they look like posters from a distance, but they're not. Could you describe how they look?
Well, I mean, it's interesting you say posters, because posters are the inspiration for a couple reasons. One is because I make images of posters as one of the bodies of work that I do. I love the WPA era posters. Just the graphics of them are really conducive to being translated in leather. And also kind of as an homage. I just love that the U.S. Travel Bureau's project to you know, advertise traveling in America, you know, that's wonderful. Or the Buffalo Bill posters. I mean, of course, we all know those advertising campaigns are legendary. But so that was the inspiration point for doing the public lands posters. And also because here in Livingston, you know, this is very much a poster culture, which is something that I really love about the town, because it feels like it's the 1980s or something, you know? Like you literally learn about what band is playing on the weekend because of a poster on a window. So I find that charming, and I want these to be part of that language. Because after I make the image in leather, I make a 12 by 18 poster size image of it that's much more affordable. And then I give a percentage of the proceeds from the poster sales to a public lands advocacy organization. So they're bold color blocks that are stitched together. I have worked with some graphic designers to get those made. I have also just done work online, learning about what's unique, lakes or particular wildlife species or something like that, and then we'll make an amalgamation image. Often I will, you know, a lot of these places you see the same photo again and again, and I don't have a problem using that as a starting point, because that's the sort of the iconic image, if you will. They don't need to be incredibly unique. They need to really be about the place specifically. And then I stitch on the text, or I stitch on the name of the place in this laser cut text. So that's how they come to fruition.
Livingston is certainly an interesting place in terms of the number of artists, painters, bootmakers that make a living here, but it's also the center of a lot of controversy in terms of big developments and fancy golf courses planned, and family farms and ranches, and wilderness. You talked about Montana is unique in that we have so much public land. That is somehow all a part of your work, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of ways we can get involved. So for me, this is the one area that I've singled out that's sort of my cause. You know, I think we all have a duty as a citizen to be doing something to better our country and our place. And Livingston certainly has a lot of mechanisms available to do that. It's a very, organized community for its size. I've always been impressed. I feel like it punches above its weight. It's got a lot of established nonprofit organizations working in various facets of the community. And, you know, it's nice to see. It's really nice to be living in a place that feels hopeful.
So, Chase, other than making me a pair of boots, which we will get to when you come to visit in Billings, we can do that. But what is next on your agenda?
Well, I just finished an art fair in Austin, Texas. So I've been working in January, February to make that body of work. So I've just returned and I have boot orders. I definitely have some orders to fill. I have an upcoming solo exhibition in Denver later this year. I will probably be doing another Montana Handmade Fair with my leather tote bag product line. Yeah, and I tend to work in series. So I'll work on the artwork for a while for delivery, and then I do some boots for a bit for delivery, and then I go to the small batch products. So it's a nice cycle to be making different things, because they all feed on each other creatively.
But they're all made with leather.
Yes.
Chase, in your studio, we are surrounded by all these beautiful pieces of leather, all different colors, different weights, I imagine. But how do you take a piece of leather and turn it into a boot? What are the tools that you use, both new, antique molds, laser tools? Tell us about the tools that you need to make a boot.
So I would say 90% of the tools in my studio are indeed vintage. The very specific boot making tools, my sole stitcher, the sander, my 5-in-1 splitter, these are all refurbished tools that were in factory use in the early 20th century. They're amazing. They're all, you know, solid steel and iron and not a plastic part on them. And it's fun because a lot of people will come into the studio and just have a real interest, you know, the tool guy. I have 4 different sewing machines to sew 4 different weights of leather. You know, a lot of hand tools that are used primarily on the boots, but not always. And then the newest tool that I have would be my laser cutter, which is you know, a wonderful tool for replication or for cutting out text, which I put in a bunch of my work. But yeah, I would say 90 to 95% of everything is vintage.
When we came in, you showed us a footprint of someone's actual weight and the dynamics of where the pressure of the foot is. Is that part of the laser process, or is the laser thing really for making boots? Tell us all about that.
I'm just using the laser cutter to cut pieces out. If I need, you know, 20 flowers, I'll go ahead and have them laser cut, make a file to cut them out in the laser cutter. Otherwise, I just do it by hand, because sometimes it's just quicker. So it's not, I'm not using it every day. I'm really using it for special applications, the text and anything that I have to make in quantity. So I'm not really doing it so much on the boots.
So the laser really is used more on your artwork, more so than in the boot making. I noticed your boots have stitching, but not any embossing. Do you do that? Or I don't know enough about custom boot making, but do you have a preference?
I'm not a tooler. I don't carve leather. I always call that leather making 3.0. That's the whole different thing. The tooling of belts and purses and, yes, boots too. So no, that's not something that I do.
All I can think about is my boots and what they're going to be. So this is a little bit of a personal question, but your clients, do you work with them to decide what are the colors, what are the tops, what are the bottoms, the heels, the shape, the toe? Tell us about that client relationship.
Well, you know, not as many people as I would hope have really super formed ideas about what they want. It's interesting to me, actually. So it takes a lot more leading people. And, you know, ultimately it's about trying to get the ideal imagery for your client. You want something that they're going to love and wear. So I really try to work with them in that front. People will tend to maybe be a little bit conservative about color choices, which I always try to just make sure that that's really what they want, because if you're going to go to the effort and the expense of getting a custom pair of boots, you might want it to look a little bit more unique than something you can buy off the shelf. You know, some people just want something comfortable, and I respect that as well. But, you know, I've had some clients, you know, it's not every day that you get a request for a pair of boots that has imagery of 7 hallucinogenic botanicals. He was fun to work with. You know, what a concept. I definitely had to pause and laugh when I asked him what he was doing for the weekend. Also, you know, Hello Kitty. It's not very often that you get someone that wants to go all in on bright pink and yellow boots, pink ostrich vamps. And so those boots are super fun for me, the more gingerbready and bright in a way. But also sometimes, you know, I look at a pair of just simple stitched boots and, you know, they're just stunning. I mean, it's always interesting to me what sings. You know, you make a piece, and for all the planning that you do, you know, you can't account for when it's really gonna shine or really gonna be like, oh wow, that's a piece that I'm gonna remember for a really long time.
Chase, you're giving me a lot of fuel for me designing what I'm gonna have for my boots. All of a sudden I thought, wait a minute, I can incorporate my own artwork into some stitching and into some color. So we have had a wonderful time chatting with you, artist and custom boot maker. And thank you for having us in your beautiful studio.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.